everyone. Welcome to Stutter Talk, episode 564 for January 10th, 2016. I am joined today, we are joined today by a great friend of the stuttering community, Dr. Gerald McGuire. Hey, Jerry.
Hey, hey there, Peter. How are you?
I am great. I am glad that you're over the flu and you're ready.
Yeah, you're ready to join us.
Yeah, we got a big topic today. What causes stuttering? And Nina G was on last week and she said something like, well, you got to have Jerry on. And I said, I know, we're working on it.
That's great.
Yeah, Dr. Gerald McGuire is chair of psychiatry and professor at the University of California's Riverside School of Medicine. Dr. McGuire is considered by many to be the leading authority on the medical treatment of stuttering, and Jerry is a person who stutters himself. Big question. So when and you work with a lot of parents, you do a lot of research. When parents come to you and they say, what causes stuttering? How do you respond?
Great thought. Well, great question. I tell them that we don't know for sure, but that it tends to run in families, so there's a strong genetic component. But there must be something in the environment that must act as a trigger. And I also, when the parents ask me, I also try to allay their fears that it's not something that they're doing that causes stuttering in the child. And I build upon this upon the history that occurred in other neuroscience disorders over the years, such as schizophrenia, where there was a prevailing theory for many years of the schizophrenogenic mother, it was called, Peter, where poor parenting or aberrant parenting led to the disorder. So I don't want my parents to develop a sense of guilt that they're somehow causing this in their child, that we know that there is a, we're learning more and more, there's a strong genetic component, there's a developmental component to this disorder. Then the big question is, are there with the genetics, are what triggers? So I haven't seen much work in this area, but for stuttering, but what triggers the genes through an epigenetic process to turn on or to turn off that leads to stuttering? Could there also be, like you and I have talked on this show before, in a certain subset of individuals who have a an immune response to an infectious cause or anything that leads to an immune response, and somehow that turns on a certain gene, or there's a reaction or an antibody reaction? Could that occur in a subset of individuals as well too? And then there's the cases of acquired stuttering, and you know that wouldn't happen with a parent, but the cases of an acquired stuttering, usually in an older individual who has developed stuttering after, say, a stroke or a medication effect or other things with it. So it's like I tell my parents that the final common symptom may be stuttering, like the final common symptom in a person presenting to a primary care physician may be high blood pressure, but that high blood pressure could be from a number of different causes, kidney causes, cardiac causes, vessel changes, medications, even though the end-of-line symptom looks the same. Does that kind of follow what I'm trying to explain there?
Yeah, it makes total sense, and I think I have like 8 questions at once,
sure.
But I can't ask you 8 questions at once, but how about this one? So when I talk to Dennis Drina from the National Institutes of Health maybe a month ago or so, I was getting the sense that – so they've – as you well know, they've discovered 4 genes that lead to stuttering. And one of the things I thought he was saying was that so far the only symptom that they see with these 4 genes is stuttering. They don't see any other – symptoms. What do you make of that? And I hope I got that right, but
yeah,
what do you make of that?
Well, Dr. Drain is doing great work, and I think that is fantastic that he's arriving at those conclusions. And hopefully that would then lead down the road here for us for better treatment outcomes. With the, it's it's the novel that you have these four genes, but are those genes always expressed? That's the question I have for him. Are those genes, are there ways to turn on those genes or turn off those genes? Are there ways to inhibit those genes? What is the final product that is developed by those genes or not developed by those genes that leads to the stuttering? And is there some way then that we could manipulate the process or at least the end result of those genes such that we can lead to a better treatment outcome? I know we're looking toward the cause today, but always try to think back about what is going to be the treatment outcome to help people with stuttering or to prevent stuttering from occurring in the first place.
Yeah, and there's so many of our listeners who would agree with you. They're always looking for what treatments we're going to get from all of this.
Yes.
So let me jump to a listener question, because I find out that often the listeners have better questions than I do. And you mentioned or alluded to other issues related to stuttering. So here's a great question from Katie Gore in Illinois. And she asks, are there conditions with seemingly similar neuropathologies as stuttering, which have been successfully treated with medications? Or is stuttering unique? And if so, why?
Well, I'm under the belief that stuttering is related as a basal ganglia disorder of certain regions of the brain that are also lead to other conditions that have many similarities to stuttering. And these are Tourette's disorder or tic disorders, even some elements of obsessive compulsive disorder, families of where Tourette's is common. There's some studies by Cummings suggesting that stuttering is common and ADHD is common. And many of my patients that I treat, there seems to be this level of comorbidity. And so we have learned, and we actually have FDA-approved medications for the treatment of Tourette's. And these same medications have been applied for the treatment of stuttering. And each one of these studies, we need further replicated studies, and I invite other people to join us in this work. Each of these studies with these medications have been shown to be beneficial in stuttering. Not one has yet gone through the process for that specific indication in stuttering, but they are FDA approved for the treatment of Tourette's disorder. In fact, a recent medicine just in the last year and a half got an indication for Tourette's disorder, a medication called aripiprazole. And we just published another case of the use of this medication successfully treating adolescent stuttering. And these medications work on the dopamine system. We believe they target the regions of the basal ganglia where some imaging work and some other work is done to show that may be a region of the brain that may be involved in the pathophysiology of stuttering. So to her question, yeah, we do have bottles with other disorders, and that these other disorders can give us clues about the treatment of stuttering. And also, the demographics of Tourette's they are similar to stuttering. In that there's a similar male to female ratio, the age of onset is similar, stress and anxiety tend to make the symptoms worse. People who stutter, we often have tic-like motions associated with our speech disfluency, and individuals with Tourette's oftentimes have speech disfluencies themselves. So there are some similarities between Tourette's and stuttering, and we can glean information from the treatments of that disorder and the pathophysiology from that disorder to help us guide us in stuttering. And there's even a genetics work that was done in China that suggested that the dopamine system was abnormal in stuttering like it is in Tourette's disorder.
Wow, I love talking to you, Jerry, because I just have like so many questions. I'm just sure. So excuse, I don't want to take us too far down a rabbit hole, but Is there any spontaneous recovery in Tourette's, as you know, there's so much spontaneous recovery in stuttering?
Yes, there is. And often about the same age of time of the spontaneous recovery as well too. So the age of onset, the potential for recovery as well. And even though we have FDA approved medications for Tourette's, we have not been able to convince venture capitalists or industry to go down the hundreds of million dollar pathway to develop a medication for stuttering with the thought that this disorder isn't treated by physicians and there's not much of a market, when in fact there are actually more people who stutter than have Tourette's from what I can see. Hmm. And so the market is there, and I'm hopeful that we actually have an IND from the FDA to test a new compound in stuttering. We're getting an expansion of our research program here at UCR with the Kirkup Center, and we'll be announcing that medication trial here very soon. But we do have an IND, investigational new drug application, that's been approved by the FDA to test this novel medication in stuttering, which is also similar. We think this medication may also work in Tourette's disorder as well.
Are you allowed to drop the name of the medication?
As soon as I post it on clinicaltrials.gov and get it up there for the government, and then I will be able to mention the name.
So let me share with you something and then ask you a question. I've had a few children who stutter with co-occurring Tourette's. And I think of them so fondly. They're just, I mean, I work with so many awesome kids. And I'm remembering one who I worked with who was, I think I knew him between like the third and the sixth grades. And he is such a great kid. And he would, and his father had Tourette's. I don't think his father stuttered. And he stuttered and has Tourette's. And we would sit there in speech therapy, and there was often another child there, and we all got along great. It was group speech therapy for stuttering. And he would sometimes try to figure out if it was Tourette's or stuttering that we were seeing. And he wasn't always sure, and I wasn't sure.
Yeah.
And we would laugh about it. So laughing with an 8 or 9 year old child, like, what was that? And he's like, I'm not sure.
Right.
So having shared that, how many medications have been approved to treat Tourette's, and do they have any noticeable, observable, measurable effect on stuttering?
They do. In fact, there are studies of haloperidol, which I believe is FDA approved for stuttering. It's an older medication. There are studies to support the use of haloperidol in stuttering. There's also some work with pimazide. Sheila Steger did that trial. That medication is FDA approved, also sold under the brand name years ago of ORAP, O-R-A-P, and that medication has some side effects. Haloperidol and pimazide tend to have more side effects than some of our newer compounds, but that medication was found to be effective in Tourette's, was FDA approved for such, is still used quite a bit for that disorder, and there's a study to support its use for the treatment of stuttering. And more recently, aripiprazole, which is also known as Abilify, that medication is now generic, but toward the end of its research cycle, it got an indication for children and adults who have Tourette's. And so it is safe and effective in younger people in that age group for Tourette's. And we have more than just one. We have quite a few, but we had a case that we just published of an adolescent for the treatment of his stuttering successfully with aripiprazole, and that's in the Annals of Clinical Psychiatry this past month.
That is excellent. This is Stutter Talk. Peter writes this with Dr. Gerald McGuire, Chair of Psychiatry at the University of California's Riverside School of Medicine. So I am sorry that we're jumping all around, but let's just get back to the cause of stuttering for a moment. So Dr. Dennis Drena, Dr. Mark Onzo, and Nina G have been the first three guests on this series of What Causes Stuttering. And they generally agree that stuttering is a neural processing issue with genetics playing a role. Does this fit into your understanding of the cause of stuttering, or would you tweak that a bit?
No, that's a great summary. I would agree with that. And then we're taking it down the next road, which is to say, what on that neural processing, what are the neurotransmitters or the structures that may be involved in particular? And that is where we're looking at that center to say, well, in that neural processing and the in the loops of speech, is it under the influence of what chemical. And we would take it the next step further to kind of add to that, to say that dopamine appears to be involved as a central neurotransmitter in stuttering, and that the manipulation of this neurotransmitter system has shown benefit for the treatment of individuals who stutter. So they all come very well together. I don't think dopamine is going to be the entire story from a neurotransmitter standpoint, but at least there's some significant research that goes back 30 years to show that medications that can affect that system can have a beneficial effect in stuttering. So I would just kind of add that to what they've already said about the genetics, the neural processing, and to say that from a neurophysiological standpoint, the dopamine seems to play a central role in that process.
And I want to ask you a bit about dopamine in just a moment, but right before we went on air, I was reviewing your wonderful book from, I think, 2010, Without
Yes.
Hesitation, Speaking to the Silence and the Science of Stuttering. And at the very end of the book, I'm going to read something you wrote. You wrote that stuttering happens because of brain chemistry, perhaps because of genetics, and for many reasons now being researched. That's a pretty good answer too, right? I mean,
it is. Thank you.
You just said that. And I have to say, one of the very first self-help meetings I ever attended had a rare moment where they invited a speech language pathologist to present. Usually it was just people who stutter, but on this day there was a professional there. And when I walked in, or when she came in, she was telling us how stuttering exists at the level of the larynx. And it wasn't that long ago that people were saying stuff like that. But I mean, we can cast that aside as nonsense now, right?
Right. Absolutely. You know, I was presenting at an ASHA conference. It was 1994, 1995, and had a poster up about the use of the medication, and we had also presented there about we were the first to publish with PET imaging, positron emission tomography imaging, and stuttering. And we had proposed at that time that the basal ganglia was involved in stuttering. We came out with this, and a pretty prominent stuttering researcher stood up and said, during his talk, you know, we got this, you know, I was considerably younger, I was maybe in my 20s then. And he said, we got this kid from California who says that we have a hole in our head theory. We got to remember that, you know, this is pretty much about the throat and the mouth, and we have to discard what's going on in the brain.
Ooh.
And that was, probably 1994. And I said, man, you know, I'd like, you know, but the vast majority of people when I presented there, you know, coming as an MD to a speech pathology meeting, were very open and inviting. And I worked closely, you know, with Glendon Riley, who's since passed away for many years. And he served as a great mentor to me and really helped helped guide me in this research. So, but it wasn't that long ago. We're talking 20 years ago when that statement was made to me in that group. At that time, and I still was struck by that wow, we're not even looking at the brain at that time.
Yeah, I remember, and it was probably around the same time that I heard this person speak. Now, it's actually probably a little later in the 90s, maybe, but still the 90s. And I remember sort of looking around the room, and there was no rioting. You know, I kind of felt like, we should be disagreeing a bit more. And why am I the only person disagreeing here? And maybe we were just all polite. But I mean, I knew nothing about stuttering except my own experiences, which is a lot, I guess. But to think that somebody was telling me my stuttering exists at the larynx level, and that's the thing, I kind of thought, ooh. Anyway, well, I'm not glad you had a similar experience, but it's comforting to know that you had a similar. Okay, so let me ask you this. So you've said on Stutter Talk that while there are no FDA-approved medical treatments for stuttering right now, that all of the dopamine blockers which have been researched have been found to reduce the symptoms of stuttering. Does that tell us anything about the cause of stuttering?
I think it does. You know, we can't ignore that. We can't ignore that research. But what's kind of interesting is we got to get our disciplines to read each other's research more, because these studies are being published and they're still coming out. They're studied primarily in medical journals, and then not in the speech pathology journals. And so we have to have some more of a crosstalk and bring the disciplines together. We are getting there. I think the key is the quality of the research. These have been mostly a smaller single site studies. Even when you go back to the haloperidol studies, the thioridazine studies, the clopromazine studies, they were single site. They weren't multi-center. We did do double blind studies of risperidone and olanzapine, and so those studies are done. But we actually got to get more groups involved in this research, because there's never been a negative study of a dopamine-based medication in stuttering. They've all been positive. But the strength of the study design, we need to have more multi-center. We do have placebo-controlled studies that are double-blind, but we need one to go through the full FDA process through the phase 3 trials and to get that indication to prove it. The problems are the majority of these medications are already generic, so there's really no financial incentive for someone to invest the hundreds of millions of dollars to bring them to market and to get an indication. So we have to look for a compound that has a patent life and other things like that. We think we've identified one now that has a novel mechanism on the dopamine system, and we'll go down that pathway as we line up the funding to do this.
So is it correct to think that you're looking currently at dopamine blockers as the near future, or is that not – are you looking elsewhere too?
We are looking elsewhere too. And I wouldn't necessarily say dopamine blockers, but agents that work on the dopamine system. And there are different mechanisms to affect the dopamine system. That's our major target. We're not giving up on GABA. Pagaclone worked there. We believe we just underdosed that product. And then the funding ran out with the economic downturn there in the late 2000s. But there was a signal there that the GABA manipulation could have a benefit in a subset of individuals. But looking at that system in the basal ganglia system, it's a complex structure of the brain that has influence from GABA and dopamine. And we think that manipulating that could lead to some beneficial treatments. Now, again, these won't be cures. You know, what we're talking about with genetics could eventually become a cure or a preventive strategy for people who stutter. But I'm trying to find ways that we can also help people here and now for this disorder who are living with it today.
Hmm. And yeah. Just to sidetrack us for a second, I still get asked about pagaclone. I'm sure you do get asked a lot more than me.
I do.
So I don't fully understand. So if you wanted to research it now, can you not do that because it's owned by somebody else? Or why exactly is it that a research team couldn't continue a study on pagaclone?
Well, it's not manufactured anywhere in the world, and the patent is held by another company, Endo. I think they've been bought again. So you'd have to get permission from them to test it, and then you have to develop into an agreement. But I think the patent is running out on that medication pretty soon. So the incentive to actually test it would not be there, you know?
I just assume that if the patent runs out, that would mean that another company could start to use this pharmaceutical, or am I not getting it?
Another company could, but why would they? Because they couldn't make any money off it. It would cost some millions of dollars to begin the manufacturing process. They couldn't sell it.
I see. Of course. Okay. I'm being dense. You're right. Of course. I wasn't thinking.
Right. Right. So it's like, why would they invest? That's why with the generic, you know, we've got aripiprazole generic, we've got haloperidol generic, we've got olanzapine generic. Well, let me say olanzapine, risperidone, and haloperidol have all been shown in double-blind placebo-controlled studies to improve stuttering. These are pretty strong studies, but all of them are generic and they cost, you know, pennies a pill. So that no one's going to invest, you know, the hundreds of millions of dollars to get an FDA approval because there's no financial incentive. That's just the way the system works. So you've got to identify a compound that may have a patent life ahead of it where someone can make some money. I know that sounds horrible, but we could test these medications through NIH research and other things like it to prove that we're looking at that route, but it would never lead to an FDA indication because there's no one to spend all that money to go through the process. Does that make some sense? I hate to say
it. No, it makes total sense. It's just a shame that there's not a way that our government could be smarter because, you know, while stuttering, I mean, there's some really serious, not that stuttering isn't serious, of course it's serious, but you would want to think that if a pharmaceutical is nearing the end of its patent and somebody realized it might be suitable to treat a certain disorder, you would think there'd be a way to extend the patent life so that one would look into the research of it.
You'd think that, but then people always say, well, the medications cost too much. We need to get them on the market for these other conditions and drives up the cost of healthcare. And so it's always that balance, you know, the medicine costs this much amount of money, but yet you want it approved for the masses who can afford it. And so there's always that balance, you know?
Yeah, and I'm thinking about this stuff fresh on air because these aren't conversations I have a lot. So you're offering really great feedback. So,
thank you, Peter.
Thank you. Stutter Talk, Peter Rice is with Dr. Gerald McGuire. I'm in Carrboro, North Carolina. Jerry's in California. It's a coast-to-coast conversation. So Ross Christensen in Illinois asks, and he put this on Facebook, I understand pharmacology treats conditions at the molecular level. Has your research reached a point where you understand the molecular cause of stuttering, and could this lead to more effective treatments?
Great question. We're about to embark on a mission here at the Kirkup Center at UC Riverside School of Medicine in developing the first tissue brain bank for stuttering research, which is in the next year we're going to announce that we would like for individuals when they pass away to donate their brains. I know this sounds kind of morbid, but
it sounds neat actually.
For people who stutter, to donate their brains to our center, and then we can test with the tissue the molecular basis of stuttering. That's never been done, from my understanding and my review, in stuttering. It's done in other disorders, Parkinson's and Alzheimer's and schizophrenia and bipolar disorder. And we need to do that in stuttering. That's where we need to go to really bring this to the next level, is for us to continue our work here and to develop our brain bank. And that's where we're going to go, and then we can hopefully develop from a molecular level. There's been some very good brain imaging work that looks at the real life, real time of the structures of the brain. Some great work by Dr. Chang in Michigan and others, and Kate Watkins and others that look at that. But from a molecular level, what we can say is that from a transmitter level through the imaging with dopamine, that appears to play a role through our very small PET study that we did looking at the dopamine system. Really, I think we need to go to that next stage and look at the brain bank and the brain tissue to take it to the next level, Peter.
That's really exciting. I think it's really cool that you, so you're basically going to ask people who stutter to donate their bodies for medical research, which I think it's cool. It's neat.
Yeah, you know, that's where we want to go. And that's kind of the mission here at the Kirkup Center, is to kind of really delve into more into the medical aspects of stuttering and bring it to the same level of research that other brain disorders have. When we look at Alzheimer's and bipolar disorder and depression and Parkinson's, and really get to that level where we're afforded the same level of research that other disorders of the brain are, because that's where, you know, what you said 20 years ago, the thoughts were that this was not a brain disorder. And now, you know, I think I'm the fourth person you've had on, and we're all saying that this is a brain disorder. I think that's fantastic that we're arriving at that. This is a brain disorder with genetic underpinnings. And now we're going to go to the next level. Let's study the brain and why it leads to stuttering. And can we develop better treatments? And even going out on a limb, to say, can we eventually cure it? Is there a way to cure it? I know that's a bold statement to say, because we're not there with our treatments now, but why not think big? Why not think big?
Yeah, and I think a few years back, even the word cure would annoy me, frankly, when it comes from you. It doesn't annoy me, especially since it's not the first thing you're saying ever.
Right.
So, yeah, and it's a couple of things here. So Dr. Chang is going to come on in late January or February for this series to talk about her brain imaging work. So that's, I'm glad that you mentioned her, so that should be cool. And you're right. All of the first four guests have agreed that stuttering is a brain disorder. And the first guest, Dr. Mark Onzel, he agreed with that, but he cautioned me. And I appreciated his caution, that I think he said something like he uses neural processing instead, because when you say brain disorder to a parent, they might relate it to IQ. And I thought that was a fair warning that he gave me. So I just wanted to throw that out there.
Yeah, though I don't think that, because I have so many other disorders where it's a brain disorder, but their IQ is fine.
It could be a cultural difference. He's in Australia, maybe it means something else there. I did take his point. So let me ask you this. When we spoke at the end of 2014, and I can't believe we didn't have you on air in 2015.
Oh, I wasn't, huh?
It's odd, huh? I didn't bother you enough. That's the problem. when we spoke in 2014, you mentioned that you were looking at one to two new compounds. Do you have any updates on that, or any general updates to share about the work you're doing?
Yeah, so that IND, now we've got approval from the FDA to proceed with that novel compound, and that will be posted on clinicaltrials.gov, I'm hopeful, soon. Acenapine is a medicine that we've halted the studies for right now. The medication, we're going to have an interim analysis on the 18 subjects that we've completed with the acenapine. That medication has gone through a few changes. When we moved our center from UC Irvine to UC Riverside, it was at the sauce at the same time that the medication was sold. So we had to develop a new contract. So we couldn't continue the study in our grant because I changed universities. We moved our center. Acenapine was sold from Merck to Forest. So we're beginning the contracts with Forest for them to ship medication. You just can't test a medication unless you have a contract and you could ship it and you get approval. So we were developing that. And then Forest was bought by Activist. So we were working with that company on developing a contract. Then Activist bought Allergan. So now we're working with Allergan on developing the contract. And the latest is a company called Pfizer, a big company, is buying Allergan. So I'm just going to wait to see where this all goes. And then hopefully I can complete that study and do a full analysis. But we do have a subjects halfway through, and I may just complete the study. It might not be powered as much, which I wanted a larger sample size, but I may complete an interim analysis just to see what signal we've shown with that medication. But that just shows you that, you know, sometimes you're just kind of run into other issues as you test those compounds. Mm-hmm. We are also be submitting a case series of another compound. We're gathering the data now on lurasidone, which is another dopamine blocker, and we're gathering that case series. That's an open label study, so not as controlled as a placebo control, and that will be coming out. We've published our aripiprazole study, or just a case, another case on that. And then we have accepted for publication another deep brain stimulation case that will be accepted, and we have the proofs on the article, and that will be out next month in next month's Journal of the Annals of Clinical Psychiatry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That is really cool. And for folks who want to contact Dr. McGuire, they can send an email to gerald.mcguire@ucr.edu. And if you don't have a pen, don't worry. You could go to stuttertalk.com, episode 564, and Dr. McGuire's email will be in the show notes. Can I ask you just one last question, Jerry?
Sure, please, Peter. Yeah.
So towards the beginning of the show, you were saying that we really don't know what is causing, what's triggering stuttering in people who have this predisposition to stutter. And sometimes when this topic comes up with a parent, I might give an example like, well, a child might not have any noticeable allergies or asthma until they walk into a room and there's three cats. And right. I might give that as an example. And, you know, related to the variability of stuttering, also, well, some days you stutter a little, some days you stutter a lot. And that, you know, again, that allergy comparison could work where, you know, I don't have asthma until I'm in a small apartment with three cats, and then I have asthma.
Right.
Is that what you were thinking? Or
yes.
Okay. Do you want
to? That's a great, you know, Peter, you're very good.
I've had good mentors.
Great analogy. May I borrow that?
You can borrow it from me, but I borrowed it from Phil Schneider and many others. And Phil might say it.
Phil's great.
I'm sure Phil said it better than I just did.
No, that's really good. Well, I will reference Phil and you on that. That's fantastic. That's really good. I really like that.
And well, thank you very much. You're one of my mentors, so that means the world.
Oh, thank you
to me. And one of the reasons I bring it up is that I don't know enough about this as I should, but I know from previous conversations you have related. You think there might possibly be a relationship between stuttering and something like strep throat. So that I wasn't sure of where you wanted to take.
Yeah. Well, I think there could be an immune response. We're actually writing up another case of another case of an individual with a hyperimmune system that seems to have triggered the onset of stuttering in this individual. And then when treated with immunosuppressive drugs, the stuttering actually improved. And this is similar to another case that we had with PANDAS that we published some years back. The pediatric autoimmune neurological disorders, neuropsychiatric disorders associated with Streptococcus. So, not to say that strep is always a trigger, may just be in a subset, or maybe there's another immune response that triggers stuttering in certain individuals. So that would be an area of further study, because what we need to look at next is what turns these genes on or what may turn them off that leads to the expression of stuttering. That's a whole field of epigenetics and others that I like to see other groups begin to look into this research world. And hopefully stuttering, as it has grown, great to see where our colleagues are going with this research. And I invite other universities and centers to, you know, work toward this common goal that we have together to help people who stutter and to elucidate the causes and to develop better treatments.
Well, Dr. Gerald McGuire, Chair of Psychiatry at the University of California's Riverside School of Medicine, thanks for joining us today on Stutter Talk.
Thank you very much, Peter. Thank you.